know what exactly to expect next year and perhaps the period in between, and if there are any opportunities that perhaps may arise to our small businesses, particularly or partnerships with small businesses, perhaps we would be happy to know about that. If they are not there, it's not your fault as well. But I know that our businesses can find opportunity one way or the other. And without much ado, I think you can make your presentation. We are a nation which has experiences that are there in quite a number of countries. What is the expression? A world. Okay, I'll remember the expression, but over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, all. I'm here to try to introduce to you the scope of work of our company, Match. Match Event Services, that is, as well as Match Hospitality. I will give you an overview of the areas of operation that Match was contracted to deliver on behalf of IFA, and I shall be happy to break this presentation into the sections that you see before you. I will start by giving you an overview of the Match company, the work we do for FIFA with regard to ticket distribution. The area of accommodation might be of particular interest to yourselves, given the fact that we do have a very strong presence from the non-hotel service providers. This element of the accommodation solution for 2010 is particularly strong. Transportation is also an area where I believe that at the subcontractor level, we touch a large number of smart companies involved in that sector. FIFA has reintroduced for the first time after an absence of almost 12 years a tour operator program. And that again is going to bring together a collection of approximately 150 tour operators from all over the world, all of whom will be out to secure services from not only Match but also various other parties. And then I shall move into the area of Match Hospitality. Match Hospitality is a separate company to Match Services. It's affiliated to ownership in the sense that the shareholders of Match Hospitality and those of Match Services are almost the same, not quite the same, but almost the same. So let me first of all tell you what Match has been contracted to do. Essentially, we entered into an agreement with FIFA in 2003 to cover the 2010 and 2014 FIFA World Cup. So our contract with FIFA currently extends through to the end of the Brazil World Cup in 2014. FIFA contracted us to deliver essentially three important solutions for the event, one being the provision of accommodation to the FIFA constituent groups, as well as all other visitors to South Africa for the World Cup. In most cases, this is provided on an optional basis. It's only certain critical groups, such as the teams, that are required to contract through Match, and that is mostly to do with security, transportation, the logistics that it takes to look after a team during the stay in the host country. But other than that, Match should be seen as one of a number of options in the delivery of the accommodation solution. In terms of ticketing, we act as the exclusive sales agent to FIFA. We are responsible for the production, distribution, the sales, the seat assignment process for all 3 million tickets that will be used for the World Cup. As part of the ticketing program for 2010, as I mentioned to yourselves before, FIFA has reintroduced a tour operator program. That's largely due to the fact that we believe that unlike Germany, for example, it will not be as easy for independent travelers to make their way around South Africa. So we felt that this would be again, and I will cover part of that during the course of this morning's presentation. One of the areas that we're also responsible for is the delivery of the so-called computer solution for the event. That involves the development of the event management systems that support the event, such as accreditation, protocol, transportation, and so on. It involves the setting up of the communications network to support entities such as HBS, which is responsible for producing the signal that will go to the world in terms of the matches, the 64 matches that will take place next year in South Africa. So essentially, when we came to this agreement with FIFA back in 2003, it was President Blatter that effectively found the name for the company. At that time in 2003, when we signed our first contract with FIFA, he decided that the name match was fitting because he could coordinate the works of management, of accommodation, ticketing, computer solution. And we had a problem with age because at that time we were not involved in hospitality. So he decided that it should be hand in hand. Now apparently that in Swiss German makes quite a lot of sense. But for a Mexican who's not accustomed to walking hand in hand with another gentleman, it seemed to me that we needed to find something else to attribute to the word or to the letter H. So as a result of that, in 2007, our company bid for the vice to be the hospitality vice holder for 2010 and 2014, and that is precisely what we now have in terms of the letter H. So, we're a Swiss company. It's owned by a British company called Byron PLC. Initially, it was a partnership between Byron PLC and a Swiss company called Eurotech Global Sports. They themselves have been involved in the delivery of the IT solution for the last few World Cups, certainly since 1998. In the case of Byron PLC, our involvement with the FIFA World Cup goes back to 1986. The Mexico World Cup. We cover not only the FIFA World Cups, but also all the other FIFA events. So we're very much involved in the youth competitions, the female competitions, the FIFA congresses, and all the various the Club World Championships, and all the other FIFA events. So in terms of our day-to-day involvement as a service company to FIFA, it obviously goes beyond the responsibility of the FIFA World Cup itself. Having said that, certainly FIFA's World Cup is the one event that obviously generates most of the revenue, and therefore it's by far the most important part of our work with FIFA. We have a South African subsidiary called Match Event Services, and it is through Match Event Services, PTY, that we contract most of the services that we sell on to the FIFA constituent groups. So that company was formed specifically to support our operation in 2010 in South Africa. I think it's important to understand what's happening in the world of sporting events. I think that until very recently, the model that was used was effectively award the right to stage an event to a host country or host city in the case of the Olympic Games, and for that country to form a local organizing committee, typically a company set up by the member association that secured the right to stage the FIFA World Cup. And certainly up until and including the 2006 World Cup in Germany, that was the model that was used by FIFA. And it was the local organizing committee's responsibility to effectively deliver all the various services that were required from the event. Not surprisingly, FIFA found that it really was a waste of expertise, because it's only at the end of a FIFA World Cup that people who were involved in that event actually acquired experience to successfully stage the next World Cup. But time time and again it was finding that there was a drain of experience drifting away from the event due to the fact that every local organizing committee looks inwardly to fill the requirement. So one of the benefits that FIFA considers stem from the match formula is to be able to retain know-how and bring it from one World Cup to the next. As I explained to you before, I have personally been involved in seven World Cups, so therefore what I know today is a little bit more than what I did when I first became involved in the early 80s when I was looking forward to the Mexico 86 World Cup. So match is basically a vehicle to retain expertise and to make sure that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every 4 years. So a lot of the intellectual properties that are developed to service a particular World Cup are carried forward to the next World Cup because of the operational rationale that is used to deliver their services. It also helps FIFA bring stability in terms of delivery of the services. Obviously, everybody has a different way to try to deliver a particular solution. And when you have a service company that is involved one event after another, there is a carry forward of relationships that ultimately make the whole thing work. We're not an independent contractor in the true sense of the word. We're very much dependent on being very transparent with people in terms of the financial arrangements that we enter into with our customers as well as with our suppliers. So you have to understand that Match operates very much as we would operate if we were a subsidiary of FIFA or if we were a division of FIFA. We don't consider ourselves to be a totally independent company acting for our own purposes. The whole idea is to try to create a very lean company that can act with all the instincts of a private enterprise in terms of cost, in terms of marketing, in terms of sales, but at the same time making sure that we keep FIFA fully involved in all the decision-making process. I think it's also important to understand that FIFA relies very much on the goodwill that surrounds the delivery of the FIFA World Cup, so a lot of what we do affects positively or negatively the goodwill that the event will carry beyond the event. So I think it's important to understand that we're here for as long as we continue to, on the balance of things, generate goodwill with those who come to the FIFA World Cup. In terms of other objectives, FIFA wants to exercise control. Funnily enough, it seems that it's easier for an organization like FIFA to control a third party than to control itself. And I think that sounds very peculiar, but it's true. You can be much more demanding with a third party who sees you as a customer that needs to be kept happy than if it is basically your own division or your own departments within the organization. Maybe that is not just unique to FIFA, but in other walks of life. In terms of ticketing, let me just tell you that we deliver what's referred to as a turnkey solution. So we deliver the complete ticketing solution to FIFA. We act as consultants in terms of providing advice to the organization, to the organizational structure that FIFA has. Essentially, FIFA has various organs that make decisions depending on the degree of importance of the decision. You have at the very top, of course, the FIFA Congress, which is the membership of FIFA. I think it currently stands 208 countries representing the entire world. Then you have the executive committee members, then you have the World Cup organizing committee, and then of course you have in the area of ticketing, the so-called ticketing subcommittee, and that is the committee that effectively makes all the critical decisions with regard to the distribution of tickets. We obviously have to meet certain performance standards that FIFA expects from us, so being efficient in operating systems, the way that we allocate space in stadia for different constituent groups, the way we seat assign people, all those things are things that require a high degree of expertise. And I think that probably over the last year or so, you may have read some negative comments about the complexity of FIFA ticketing. It's not as easy as going to a shop and basically handing over some cash and getting a ticket back. That's not the way that ticketing works in an event of the magnitude and importance of the FIFA World Cup. It's all about data collection. It's all about making sure that nobody buys tickets for resale purposes, because obviously that works to the detriment of the fan industry. It's all about protecting the commercial affiliates from ambush marketing, from competitor brands who basically buy tickets to ambush their commercial activities. And of course, that's not a good thing, because many of these commercial affiliates pay in excess of $150 million for the rights that have been associated to FIFA and the FIFA World Cup. So it's just a very complex process, and I can predict with certainty that between now and July of next year, our company match will come under some criticism, because sometimes it's very difficult for the man in the street to understand that it's not a straightforward process, that it's not as simple as finding the first 3 million ticket customers to sell the tickets to. But anyway, that's part of the work, and that's really why we get paid what we get paid to be able to take that that flag, if I may say so. In terms of the overall objective of FIFA, FIFA's objectives are very straightforward. We want to maintain the spectacle that the FIFA World Cup is, and that can only be credible when you have full stadium. So for every empty seat that you see on the TV or at the stadium next year, you have to understand that every one of those seats is heavy, weighing on my shoulders, because I'm going to be asked to explain why there was a single empty seat when the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world. But there are technical as well as commercial reasons why that might be the case. But it's certainly not something that gives me nightmares for about 3 years in between every World Cup. Every time I take a look back at pictures of the stadium with little corners of empty seats, every one of those is like a nightmare waiting to happen. So ensuring high attendance is really the principal goal that we have, but to do so in a controlled and orderly fashion so that we don't compromise the commercial rights of our commercial affiliates, as well as the fan industry having to pay premium rates for tickets that ticket scalpers bought. That's also something that is not permitted in our environment. In terms of the gross capacity for 2010, we're going to have in the region of 3.7 million seats, but it's important to understand that not all 3.7 million seats will be ticketed. The reason for that is that there will be perimeter advertising boards right at the front, and that will obstruct the view of fans who would otherwise sit on those seats. So you may find that the lower rows in the stadium are empty, not because I could have sold those seats, but because if we sold them, people would not see the match. So there are seat kills resulting from the perimeter advertising boards, also in terms of camera positions. We have to create a media tribune, which obviously takes a very large section of the main stand, and that is going to again result in a reduction of the overall capacity we have in terms of purchasable tickets. And in fact, the pie chart that I have in front of you would probably give an indication of how many tickets will in fact be sold. That we estimate is going to be in the region of 3 million tickets. 3,030,000 is the number that we currently expect to be able to sell. That excludes 83,000 seats that will be used for the media, approximately 41,000 that will be used for the VIP tribune. Every match will have a VIP tribune ranging in size from 500 to 1,000 seats. And of course, those are tickets that are provided to the FIFA guests, as well as the guests of the LOC government and some of the sponsors. So the Brazil and beyond Brazil in 2014, and that is the introduction of the so-called ticketing fund. What FIFA decided to do for the first time in its history was to allocate a total of 120,000 tickets that will be distributed on a complementary basis to individuals who might not otherwise be able to afford to go to the matches. So there will be 120,000 tickets provided across all 64 matches. I think it's fair to say that when I say across all 64 matches, obviously in terms of the final and the semifinal and some of the highlight matches, the number of tickets will be smaller than it may have been on other less popular oversubscribed matches, and obviously that's something that, to be fair, I wanted to explain this, so it's not an equal number of tickets divided across all 64 matches. In terms of the number of complementary tickets, every team has got delegations, and those delegations have got observers, and those observers want to go and see how the competition is going to play against them. So there is also approximately 78,000 tickets that will be provided that will be provided on a free of charge basis. Obviously, with Stadia not being completed as yet, even at this stage, we have to keep contingencies because we can't afford to sell a ticket that we can't deliver a seat for. So at the moment, we have approximately 340,000 seats that are reserved across the 64 matches for contingencies. But ultimately, as I explained to you, there will be just over 3 million tickets available for sale. In terms of ticket products, basically FIFA has got two products. One is the individual match tickets. Now, typically in previous World Cups, FIFA has sold venue strips, venue series. So if you were in Polokwane, you would have been asked to buy tickets for all the matches in Polokwane. If you were in Cape Town, you would be asked to buy all the tickets in Cape Town, with the exception of the so-called highlight matches, so the semifinals, the final, and the opening match would have been excluded from the venue ticket series. For 2010, FIFA decided that that might prove to be too big a cost burden to members of the general public. So he decided to introduce from the very beginning individual match tickets, so that if you could only afford one ticket for one match, you could in fact have access to one ticket, one match, live the experience of the FIFA World Cup, as opposed to having to buy a complete venue series, as may have been the case for previous World Cups. So it's just telling me that I just had breakfast, so I apologize for that. It's one of the problems, I'm not very good at these things, but anyway, forgive me for that. So that's an important decision that I think hasn't really been heavily covered in South Africa, but it's an important decision that FIFA took, and I think it would have given greater access to a greater number of people than otherwise. The other ticket product that FIFA is selling for 2010 is one particular product that is very close to my heart, and that is the so-called team-specific ticket. The reason it's close to my heart is because up until the 1998 FIFA World Cup, people bought tickets blindly. So if you bought a ticket prior to the draw, you would buy a ticket for a city or whatever, not knowing who was going to be playing those matches. And I think that football is all about following the team of your choice. So for 2002, our company developed a concept called the team-specific ticket, and that basically enables you to follow the team of your choice. You can buy a ticket prior to your team's qualification for the tournament, and prior to the draw, in the knowledge that whatever your team may play, if it qualifies for the World Cup, that's the ticket that you have just paid for. So really that was part of our strategy to minimize the resale, the unauthorized resale of tickets. Part of our company's mandate from FIFA is to try to prevent people reselling tickets for a profit. So in the past, we used to find that it was almost inevitable that a large number of tickets bought prior to the draw would end up in the so-called parallel market, because really people wanted to see a specific team and not go to a specific match in a given city. So So by introducing the Follow Your Team ticket program in 2002, it meant that you could buy a Germany series, because Germany always qualifies, so that's not a big risk. And then you would buy it all the way to the final, because somehow they always make it to the final, even when they say they're not playing well. And I think that that's the secret. Yes, always with dignity, but always talking down the game. They're always not doing so well, but suddenly, before you know it, they're playing the final, or they're playing the semi-final, or whatever. So you buy a Germany Follow Your Team series, and that means that whatever Germany may play, that's the ticket that you have. And you have the option of buying a series for 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 matches, depending on how far you wish to progress. In terms of ticket categories, you've got 4 ticket categories. And again, just to mention that for 2010, FIFA introduced a very good new development, and that is the introduction of the Category 4 ticket. This represents by far the most affordable ticket in recent FIFA World Cup history. It's a great deal cheaper, as you will see from the price list that I'll show you in a few minutes, than any ticket that we have sold, certainly since I've been around for the last 7 World Cups. So the Category 4 ticket is reserved exclusively for residents of South Africa. It doesn't matter what nationality you have. So any resident in South Africa is able to access Category 4. But nobody outside of South Africa can buy this Category 4 ticket. The rationale is that if you can afford to travel all the way to South Africa, you can afford to buy the normal ticket, the Category 1, 2, and 3. So the Category 4 is reserved exclusively for residents of South Africa. Obviously, we can't prevent people from buying those tickets even when they could afford to buy a Category 1 for legal reasons, but we certainly prefer people who can afford a more expensive ticket to buy the more expensive ticket. But anyway, that's the way it is. Wheelchair tickets, again, because of the very limited number of wheelchair access tickets, the seats that we have in the stadium, those locations can be in the Category 1, 2, 3, or 4 sectors. So FIFA decided that we would sell the wheelchair access tickets at the price of the Category 4. So you may have a seat that is bang in the best sector in the stadium, but you will have paid the price of the Category 4 sector. And in fact, you don't pay for your companions. So you can bring somebody to help you get to the match at no cost to that person. In terms of the sales process, we are about to complete the second sales phase. The second sales phase finishes on Monday. I have to tell you that one of the things that has surprised me tremendously in South Africa is the fact that both England, Germany, Brazil, and other teams are almost all completely sold out in terms of the team-specific ticket series. One of the things that is personally a big disappointment is the fact that we still have tickets available to Follow Bafana Bafana. And that, to me, is rather extraordinary. It is the host country. It's been arranged for it to win the World Cup. And by the way, that's not true. I plead the fifth. So it really is surprising. And I want to understand why it is that is happening. Because it's certainly the case that for every World Cup that's ever been hosted, the one team that you can rest assured will be the number one most popular team is the host nation. So again, it's something that we're trying to work out, and I think it's got to do with performance. But frankly speaking, national pride should override performance. I think that certainly I would say that if there is one area of concern with regard to ticketing, is we want to see Bafana play to a full house of Bafana fans, not the fans of the opposition. So that's a little bit of a sour note, but it has to be said. So go and buy your tickets before Monday, because between now and Monday you've got loads of Bafana Bafana tickets. After that, you'll be competing with the fans of the opposition. And they are going to grab those tickets faster than you can blink. So go and get you Bafana Bafana tickets. In terms of the third cell space, this works very much as the original cell space did, which is that we collect applications from all over the world. We expect most of the matches to be oversubscribed. So as a result of that, on the 1st of February next year, we're going to conduct a random selection draw to identify the successful applicants for the oversubscribed matches. The cell space will start on the 5th of December, one day after the draw. The draw is taking place in Cape Town on the 4th of December. So that cell space will stay open from the 5th of December to the 22nd of January. We will then close the sales process, look at all the applications, see which matches and ticket products are oversubscribed, and then we will conduct a random selection draw. Any tickets that are left unsold during the third sales phase will then go on sale on the 9th of February, and that sales phase will work on a first-come, first-served basis and end on the 7th of April. We then close sales for approximately a week, and then we resume sales on the 15th of April, and we'll be selling tickets through to the 11th of July, subject to availability, of course. Now, you may ask, how can it be that we will have tickets available for sale during the World Cup? The answer to that is very simple. During the round of 16 quarterfinals, semifinals, third, fourth place match, and even the final, we cannot with certainty know which teams are going to go to the subsequent rounds. So we may find that a match in Soccer City, the biggest stadium we have, for the round of 16 is going to be played between, let's say, for argument's sake, North Korea and Honduras. If that is the case, then we will, in all probability, have 16% of the stadium unsold. And the reason for that is that each member association has the right to acquire 8% of the tickets, in other words, their fans. So that match could have been played by England versus Holland, in which case it would have been sold out a year before or 6 months before. So we won't know until 2 or 3 days prior to that match in Soccer City whether we have a full stadium or whether we suddenly have 16% of the tickets available for sale. And that is why from time to time you might see an empty seat that people will wonder how it is that we didn't sell. So those are the sales phases. In terms of the sales distribution channels, we have two principal sales processes. One is through FIFA.com, FIFA's website. Now, just to give you an idea, and I think it's particularly relevant to yourselves, is the fact that in Germany, for example, 99.7% of all tickets sold to the general public were sold online. That showed a huge rise as compared to 2002 for the World Cup in Korea and Japan. Of course, in France, 98, there were no online sales. So 2002 saw the introduction of internet sales as a main vehicle. By Germany, it became almost the sole vehicle or sales channel. In fact, so much so that our friends from the organizing committee did not even bother to print an application form. It just didn't seem to make sense to print hard copy applications when, in fact, everybody was perceived to have access to the internet. Now, for 2010, we felt that may exclude certain members of the general public, and as a result of that, we decided to take a step back, go to a similar process to what we may have had in 1998 and to a lesser extent in 2002, and we decided to produce a hard paper ticket application form. Now, what we then had to establish was the distribution channel for these application forms. And we found F&B a very supportive and a very loyal and a very efficient partner to do that. So they have been very helpful in making sure that the man in the street has access and the ladies in the street have access to applications. of pricing, again, an important decision that was taken by FIFA together with Daniel Dance, local organizing committee, was to effectively have a U.S. dollar price for the international market and for all corporate entities, and to price the tickets for the general public in South Africa, in South African rand. So that was an important development. One that was very similar to what we did in 2002, where international tickets were sold in U.S. dollars, and then for the domestic markets of Korea and Japan, tickets were sold in won and yen. So again, for 2010, you've now got a situation where if you live overseas, even if you're South African, you buy tickets in U.S. dollars. If you're a resident of South Africa, even if you're German or Mexican, you buy tickets in South African rand. Now, what I'd like to draw your attention is the big difference in price between the Category 3 and the Category 4 tickets. Category 3 at $80 for the group stage matches is very close to what we would have had back in Germany in 2006. In fact, it's a little higher than it would have been in 2006. And if you look back at FIFA World Cups for the last 20 odd years, you'll find that prices have been consistently rising regardless of the country that holds the World Cup. It's basically neutral to the host nation. And for Brazil, I would expect the price that we have today for $80 to probably go up to 90 or 95 US dollars by the time we go to Brazil in 2014. The big difference for 2010 is the introduction of this significantly more affordable ticket, which is the Category 4 tickets. And as you can see, you've got a price difference of 400%. You've got $20 being the price of a group stage match for Category 4, the same for wheelchair access. And the wheelchair access, I explained to you before, is even better value for money because it brings two people into the stadium and you could end up in the best position in the stadium. You could be by the center line and you would have paid $20 for both persons. And then if you go to the final, you see that it's $150 for a Category 4 as compared to $400 for Category 3 and $900 for Category 1. So there's a huge price difference, and I think that I certainly hope that for 2014 FIFA will maintain the policy of having a super price for the more affordable tickets. Now, this is another important decision that was taken with the support of the local organizing committee, and I commend them for that. And that is the fact that, obviously, if you're going to have two currencies at play, and if the two currencies do not have parity, you will have to decide what is the exchange rate that you will apply. If you don't apply a fixed exchange rate, then what you have is an ever-changing price, and that would confuse the public. Today you're paying X, tomorrow you would be paying Y runs for your tickets. So the decision that was taken by FIFA with the support of the local organizing committee was to apply an exchange rate of 7 rand to the dollar and to fix that exchange rate for the duration of the World Cup. Now, you may recall that a few months ago, the exchange rate was at close to 12 to 1. So at that time, it looked as though people in South Africa were paying approximately half what a fan from overseas would have paid, even for the same categories, never mind a more affordable Category 4. But today, I think, unless I'm mistaken, the exchange rate is closer to 7.8. So now it's pretty much the same. But certainly a few months ago, when we started ticket sales, those who bought tickets in South African rand at the time would have paid significantly less than the fans from overseas in rand terms. And again, what you have in front of you is the team-specific ticket series that consists of strips of 3 to 7 match tickets. That's all that I have for the ticketing section. Now, I'm not quite sure, Mr. Chairman, what the process is, whether I should just plow on or whether I should pause in case there are any questions that people may have regarding the ticketing, but I'll be happy to assume.
can go on and up until about 10 past 10.
Okay.
And then we'll respond by questions of clarification.
Thank you, Dan.
So thanks.
Helpful to me. Thank you. So we'll move into the area of accommodation. And again, in terms of accommodation, the overall objectives of FIFA are very simple. FIFA wants to deliver accommodation at fair prices and reasonable terms of sale. We believe that that is critical for the legacy that the event may leave behind. And you know, it's surprising how, despite the years that have now passed between 92 and today, when you talk to people in the street and they talk about the legacy of a sporting event, they always go back to one particular event in history, and that is Barcelona 92. I think of all the events that have passed in recent years, the one that is truly remarkable is the huge legacy that 92 left in Barcelona. And the secret of their success was very, very simple. They were fair. They were fair and they were equitable in the way that they dealt with the foreign visitors. They didn't gouge. They didn't increase prices out of all proportion. They created a good feeling among the people that went to Barcelona. And Barcelona has never looked back. It's moved from a fairly, they would object for me to say, obscure provincial capital in Spain, because they're very nationalistic in Catalonia, but nevertheless, it was really not the capital that it is perceived today to be all over the world. So fair prices, equitable, reasonable terms of business are central to securing a strong legacy for the World Cup. The World Cup only lasts for a month. If it's going to significantly affect the well-being of people, particularly in the tourism sector, we've got to deliver value for money for next year. It's very important to ensure performance, and again, that's something that our company is particularly proud of. We have to make sure that if somebody buys a room at Southern Sun Hotel, that room is delivered when the customer arrives. And in that regard, we are very confident that South African tourism, particularly from the hotel sector, will perform very well. In terms of our partners, I think that it's fair to say that I've never had so much support as I have enjoyed here in South Africa. Certainly, Minister Martinez Foskovic has been extraordinarily supportive of everything we've done since we first started 4 years ago. Not only himself, but certainly all the organs of tourism have been extraordinarily supportive. We have the Grading Council of South Africa. They have been very helpful. We've worked together very well over the last 3 years. We took the decision to contract only with graded establishments from the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, and that served us well throughout the process. One of the earlier decisions that the minister encouraged us to take, and I think he was very wise in doing so, was for us to effectively move into the area of the so-called SMEs. I didn't quite realize at the time how relevant that decision was, because I was just a foreigner trying to set up shop in South Africa. But certainly he helped us, because we've now found ourselves with approximately 12,000 rooms in bed and breakfast, guest houses and the like, and I think that they will provide many of our customers with a very unique experience. In terms of the spread of the accommodation operation, another decision he encouraged me to take was to move away from the so-called floating hotels, bringing in ships to supplement the hotel infrastructure. And we, as a result of that, moved away from the host cities and tried to find additional inventory in the so-called match-filled locations, which include places like George, for example, where you have a very large concentration of quality accommodation that may not be a host city, but nevertheless can provide accommodation for our customers. Another organization that has been very supportive is Sandparks, which had an agreement with them in 2007. And again, they have contributed significantly to the inventory of rooms that we have available for our customers. So those are basically the various organs that we have been working very closely. Tourism Enterprise Partnership, again, they have been particularly helpful. They went across the country with us to literally hundreds of workshops all over the country. We even got rooms in places that I'm told nobody knows, like Springbok. Is called California when we had two rooms at one stage. And I remember the CEO of Southern Sun at the time couldn't believe that we had found Springbok. But anyway, we had two rooms there. We had to release it because we just couldn't operate only two rooms in the middle of nowhere. In terms of the state of play, what you have in front of you is the number of hotel rooms that we have contracted so far. We have 34,882 hotel rooms in 403 hotel establishments. That provides us with an inventory of just over 1.25 million room nights. Again, as I explained to you, Mr. Pascal-Wick encouraged us to go to the non-hotel accommodation service providers back in 2006. And as a result of that, we now have in excess of 12,000 rooms in the non-hotel service providers. Now, that, in fact, represents 20% more rooms than our original target. So it has been, in our view, a very successful part of our operation. That will deliver to our customers potentially 440,000 room nights. Now, what's complicated for Match is that that represents 1,500 individual contracts with 1,500 individual bed and breakfasts.
Excuse me. Please let us switch off our cell phones. Thank you.
Thank you. So, in terms of managing the contractual arrangements with our service providers, I think it's interesting or challenging, I would say, terms of having to manage not just a handful of contracts, but the fact that we have 1,500 contracts in place, each taking as much time to manage as it does to manage a contract with a hotel where we may have 300 rooms. So that's what an awesome task for us looking ahead to 2010. Altogether, we have 1.7 million room nights available for sale as we approach the draw in a couple of weeks' time. In terms of the type of inventory, 64% of our inventory is in hotels, 6% in timeshare, 15% in the bed and breakfast type of establishments. We have 8% of our inventory reserved for the teams, for the so-called team base camps. Then approximately 2% of our inventory is in hotels that are yet to be finalized or completed. 2% is the contribution of Sandparks. In terms of the room split, you can see the relevance of Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban, where collectively we have more than half the inventory we have available for the World Cup. When I say non-South Africa, you have to understand that we took it as read that both the South African government and FIFA wanted us to spread the benefit of the World Cup beyond the borders of South Africa. So we do have a reasonable inventory of rooms in your neighboring countries. The extent to which there will be demand for them is hard to predict at this stage, but we certainly have contracted a very significant number of rooms. In fact, we went as far as Mauritius because it's still part of SADC, and I didn't quite know where it was in the map, so all I knew was that they had a lot of five-star rooms and four-star rooms, so we decided to go and contract rooms there, not realizing that it's going to be a four-hour flight journey to the nearest point in South Africa. So we'll have to see how that works. But that certainly is valuable additional inventory that may help us bridge the gap between the demand we anticipate and the supply of rooms. In terms of room rates, we would have liked to come in at more affordable prices, but they're not particularly out of line with the market conditions, so I think that's pretty much where we're going to end up. It means that in terms of hotels, the average room rate would normally be as well as regular rooms, the average rate stands at approximately 2,393 rand. That's all for accommodation. If I may move on to transportation. With transportation, it's a byproduct of our accommodation operation in the sense that it was not our mandate from FIFA in 2003 to deliver the transportation solution. However, the moment that we decided to move away from the host cities into places like the Garden Route, when we looked at venues like Polokwane and Nell Street that simply do not have the capacity to accommodate all the people that would want to go and stay in Polokwane and Nell Street and Bloemfontein, for example, we felt that we needed to put in place a transportation solution. What we try to encourage our customers is to book their accommodation for the entire period of the World Cup. For example, our corporate customers, the commercial affiliates, in a particular location. And of course, the moment we said, why don't you stay for the month in Cape Town, they said, yes, what is Inland or whatever place in Polokwane, how are we going to get to Polokwane and back? And that's when you realize that there are no railways, there are no flights, starting by road would be impossible. So that's when you suddenly find yourself getting heavily involved into saying, well, what if we create our own infrastructure? And that's certainly what MAJC has gradually drifted towards. So we do have a situation where, once again, with the support of South Africa's Department of Transportation, we do have now access to a very significant fleet of coaches that will help us transport people on the ground. We're working closely with South African Airways and BA Comair to operate enough flight seats so that we can move people between the various parts of the country. The groups we are particularly interested in serving are the so-called FIFA commercial affiliates, our MAJC hospitality program, and the general public through the participating tour operators. In terms of the overall capacity, as I explained to yourself, through FRASA, the Department of Transportation has delivered a fleet of just over 420 coaches, which will be operated throughout the period of the month by FRASA. In addition to that, we are supplementing that fleet with local companies like ICAP in the case of Cape Town with 30 coaches. Pro Tools will provide some additional inventory, and then PUTCO, those orange buses that you've seen, I think, are also going to contribute towards our transport solution. In addition to that, of course, to all these parties, ICAP, PUTCO, etc., there will be a large number of smaller units that will be subcontracted to MAJC. Our overall anticipated numbers for the vans and for the limousines are in the region of 200 to 250, and that again is going to provide opportunities to the smaller operators. Currently, we're focusing on the so-called Golden Triangle route because that's where most of our room inventory is based, in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban, and we are seeking in the region of 100,000 sectors for our customers to fly between these three locations. In addition to that, we are also going to bring a fleet of aircraft on so-called ACME leases, wet leases, meaning aircraft with crew, which hopefully SAA will operate for MAJC so that we can supplement the capacity we can get from the two principal carriers in South Africa, namely SAA and BA Comair. The number of aircraft we will bring on those type of leases are about 20 aircraft, giving us approximately 3,000 seats, which compares more or less with the size of the BA Comair fleet. I now move very swiftly into the tour operator program. The tour operator program, as I explained to yourself before, was discontinued by FIFA in 1998. The reason for that was that FIFA found that a lot of the tickets that were provided to tour operators were in fact not used for tour operating purposes. They were used for resale purposes. So tour operators really acted much more like ticket scalpers than tour operators themselves. So as a result of that, FIFA contracted our company back in 1998 to find a way to sell tickets directly to the public, bypassing the tour operators, so that the public would be empowered by having a ticket in their hands and being able to buy services from whoever presented them with the best possible deal. So it was an effort to try to minimize the abuse that people had suffered in previous events when they were forced to pay heavy premiums on services simply because of the promise of a ticket. So the tour operator program took a little bit of effort to reintroduce back in 2010 because of the glad that the French ambassador is not with us today, because I probably would have had to be much more reserved than I've been in terms of the experience of France 98. But certainly there were no such issues in Germany, so I can say that. In terms of, that slide was repeated, by the way. In terms of trying to differentiate between the official tour operators and the non-officials, we have the so-called authorized travel package logo that is provided as a license to the official participating tour operators. If you're not a participating tour operator, you have no right to use that logo, and we have a team of lawyers that continuously monitor the market to ensure that the logo is not abused by others. The essence of the tour operator program is to ensure that the tour operates. So as a result of that, when we provide an allocation of tickets to a tour operator, they are given a period of time during which they may go and source their accommodation, failing which the allocation of tickets is cancelled. So they have to come back to match to prove that they have contracted rooms in accommodation establishments in South Africa so that we can reconcile the number of tickets that they want versus the number of rooms that they have contracted to deliver tour packages. By January of next year, we will be seeking the third element, which is the transportation to the country. So tour operators that bought tickets initially have to prove to us that they have got accommodation in South Africa, and now that they have proven that, the next step will be to prove to us that they have got the seats to bring their fans from Germany or from England or from wherever. The number of visitors that are expected to come to South Africa is given as 400,000. Now, I don't know who is the white person that came up with that number, but it certainly was not me. And to be perfectly honest, I think that you won't know the number of people that came to South Africa until after the World Cup, if ever. The reason for that is that it's very difficult to try to calculate the number of physical persons that will come to an event such as the FIFA World Cup. To me, far easier to forecast the number of room nights that will be sold to overseas visitors, to be able to forecast the number of tickets that will be sold to overseas visitors. Those are things you can quantify and you can forecast. How many people will actually come and use those room nights or those tickets is very difficult to predict, because you don't know if someone is going to come for 3 nights and use 1 ticket, or they're going to come for 30 nights and use 10 tickets. So how do you count that? Is it 1 person or 10 person? And if it's this 1 person, then surely it's more important to have 5 persons for a month than to have 10 persons for a night. So the economic impact of the World Cup will not be easily quantifiable, and certainly 400,000 is as good a number as 10. It's probably quite close to what it will be, but it's certainly not a sign that's a correct sign. I'll swiftly go through this because I think I've already covered that. In terms of the total number of tour operators, we have space for a maximum of 160 tour operators. We currently have 87 who passed the test. When you apply as a tour operator, you have to meet very stringent criteria from people in terms of who you are, the licenses, the bonding, the insurances that you cover, whether you are in good standing with your local football association or not, whether you are known to be a reliable service provider or a rogue. So at the end of the day, for every tour operator that we have approved, I think we must have had in the region of 5 tour operators that applied, but were disqualified either because they were not real tour operators or because they didn't meet the statutory requirements of the respective countries to act as a tour operator. In terms of large concentrations of fans, I think it's fair to say that you will have large concentrations in Gauteng, Rustenburg, Durban, Cape Town, the Garden Route, and Nelspruit. Those are the so-called Matchville locations. Mauritius is one that is hopefully going to become a Matchville Mauritius, but that depends on being able to solve the air transportation solution between Mauritius and South Africa, because that's going to depend on special flights being put in place to bring fans in South Africa. Port Elizabeth is a venue that we could not confirm as a Matchville location. That was due to a lack of inventory. We didn't have enough rooms in Port Elizabeth for us to have the minimum requirements. felt it was important to focus on the people whose matches will take place in Port Elizabeth. So rather than have people stay in Port Elizabeth, that would then be taken to Polokwane or Nelspruit or whatever the teams play, we felt that it was best to use the inventory in Port Elizabeth for the Port Elizabeth matches, as opposed to putting people there and then move them all over the country to watch their teams. The management package was is a very simple project. It basically combines the following services, and I'll go straight into the schematic diagram. It provides ground transportation on arrival and departure. It provides accommodation on the basis of a venue specific, so you choose where you want to stay. You may stay in Durban or in Cape Town or in the Garden Route. And then you buy your tickets on the basis of team-specific tickets. So you say, I want to follow Mexico, I want to stay in the Garden Route, and then what MICE does is it provides you with ground transportation at the Garden Route to get through to the airport in George. Then we take you to see Mexico play in Polokwane by plane. Then we meet you in Polokwane, we take care of you during your stay in Polokwane so you can see all the wonderful sights of Polokwane. And then you go to the match, and then we take you back to the airport, and then we fly you back to George, and then we take you to your bed and breakfast in the Garden Route. And by the time you get back home, you've probably been tired for about 21 hours. So it's not, it's quite a marathon, but again, it's all part of the fun. We have contracted destination management companies in every one of the so-called match fields. In Johannesburg, we have Thompson's. In Cape Town, we have Ikapa. In Durban, we have Edgesport. In Rustenburg, Bloemfontein, Polokwane, we have Fly Africa. In terms of Nelspruit, we have Pro Tours and Ikapa. Terra Novis in the Garden Route. And Port Elizabeth, Thompson's, again, is in Pretoria. And Terra Nova is in the Garden Route. Now, these are the companies that will be contracting our arms and legs in every venue. So they will be contracting a lot of staff that will be helping us move our work of visitors in and out of airports. So the opportunities that you will find at the local level is very much through these types of destination management companies. I think I've got only a minute to tell you about the MICE hospitality. I should have really saved a lot more time because that's our biggest commercial program. Chairman of MICE, I don't think I've done them a favor today by not allowing enough time. Essentially, we have three
programs. Take 5 minutes.
Are you sure? Well, I'll try to be very quick. Essentially, the rights that MICE secure for hospitality are divided into three programs. One is the commercial hospitality program. That basically is if you're a non-affiliated company, you're not one of the sponsors or the partners of FIFA, the national supporters, and you want to take your guests to the World Cup, the only vehicle to take you to the World Cup matches is through a hospitality package. So those are the rights that we acquire from FIFA. So if you are, for example, APSA, and you're not FNB, FNB being a national supporter, then you buy hospitality packages to entertain your guests. We have the commercial affiliate hospitality programs. So if you're F&B or if you are Sony or if you are Budweiser or McDonald's, you have access to hospitality from my hospitality. And then you have the VIP tribune. That's where the president of the nation, the president of FIFA, the dignitaries that will come to the matches, that's where they will be accommodated. In terms of the companies that form my hospitality, the founders was Byron Holdings, the company I work for. And then the other shareholders are a Japanese company called Dentsu, Infront, a Swiss company, and Vitesse. Vitesse is probably South African. They're a very good company. They seem to be everywhere. Whatever we need to buy, it seems that they seem to have a service for whatever we need. So we're very happy to have Vitesse as a shareholder of MICE Hospitality. MICE Hospitality AG has a local subsidiary called MICE Event Service Hospitality. We have been able to set up a network of agents all over the world. They're listed in your slide. On-site hospitality, people in South Africa use the term hospitality to describe accommodation in hotels, transportation, etc. In fact, in two levels of service, the suites. South Africa has an abundance of suites, far more than we had in Germany. In Germany, Stadia do not seem to have a large quantity of suites, as is the case in England or in most European countries. In South Africa, we found that there are Stadia like Ellis Park, particularly the older Stadia, seem to have a huge number of suites. And then the so-called FIFA business seats are a lower level of service than they use Category 1 seats with catering and on tents. Mr. Chairman, that is basically all that I think I will take the time for. Essentially, hospitality, if I can just summarize what it means that if you wish to be entertained at the stadium, you want to have access to food and beverage, entertainment, privileged parking, and a very, very nice seat, then you pay a lot of money to buy one of our packages. It costs significantly more than a regular ticket. If you're a company and you wish to benefit from the World Cup in terms of entertaining your guests, then buy a hospitality package. You buy a regular ticket. There's one way of creating revenue from non-affiliated corporate entities. Thank you all. You have been very patient with me today. Thank you for that. If you have any questions, please do.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Fair and cannot define it debating. It's over to us, the members. Really, thank you very much for a very, very good presentation. And it is now time for us, the members, to check and get clarified on this vehicle for expertise that has been gathered over the years. It acts as an institutional memory for more effectiveness and efficiency. And I think it is so far from what I have had, it definitely is going to add value to our efforts to market our tourism. But over to you, members, for your views and questions. Mr. Krumborg, then Mr. James Chivas.
Thanks, Chair. I've got three quite short questions and one perhaps a little bit longer. Previously, I've seen how the South African public have been trying to buy tickets by way of a draw. I think it's been the main mechanism, a computer-generated draw. How would one access a ticket for the opening match where South Africa has been, as the host nation, I think within that capacity, going to be playing at Soccer City? That's the first question. Second thing is, for those people who did go on the computer generated draw and get four or five tickets, sometimes there's one or two more, and then have been waiting for the 4th of December, see where their favorite team or teams might be drawn, and based on that, decide whether or not to buy a team-specific ticket. What can happen in a situation where you apply for a team-specific ticket, and it turns out that the team that you want to follow is playing a game on the same day as a completely random generated ticket that you've already bought, possibly in another city for another team? And is there a mechanism to legitimately resell that, because you can't beat Polokwane in Cape Town at 7 o'clock at the same time? Or would the computer automatically throw you out because they know you've already got a ticket for the previous game? Third question, just as a matter of interest, if one wanted to go to one of these hospitality suites as an individual or be pampered by the program just for one short experience, as you put it, just what would it set you back in South African rand? Just so we get an idea. And then the last question, Chair. Your role as match. Up until now, we've always worked on the figure of 55,000 rooms as your target that you're trying to achieve. You're almost there, I believe. But mainly for what's been described as the FIFA family, so the teams, the supporting entourage that goes to the team, FIFA officials, sponsors, You mentioned earlier in your presentation the phrase rooms for sale. I mean, presumably not selling the rooms to the team. I mean, that's all part of the logistics. So is it the tour operators that make up part of that 55,000, and is that the part that you are referring to as rooms for sale? Can we just get a better idea of how that 55,000 rooms is made up and how the commercial aspect of that operates? I mean, I don't know. I mean, if Italy and Holland, Germany, these countries, they will be at a base camp. I mean, do they get their rooms when they travel to a city from match, or how does it actually work?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm also really impressed by your preparation for your country as far as the FIFA is concerned. My first question is covered by the previous member regarding the following, that is, I think, is the motto of the Germans, that wherever they go, they follow their team. So, my second one is that I believe that as embassy, you know that they are coming here for a mission, which is FIFA, but still they have an interest because South Africa is an interesting country. You know, you have history with South Africa. Our relationship started long. As embassy, do you have, and you know that the thing which is really presently affecting us is poverty. Do you have any preparation, maybe, that after this event, your people will feel like going somewhere to sort of like, not refresh, but to see how this country of ours is, as far as that visit to the faraway places, more especially the rural areas, because we have a lot of poor provinces. Do you have any preparations which you have done for your people when after the FIFA event is over, the rural areas? Do you feel like going and visiting them, or have you done any preparation after FIFA for your people to visit such areas? At least to leave something, because they are waiting for everybody to be visiting South Africa.
Then perhaps we shall answer. And let us perhaps speak to the mandate of fourth batch.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Just a couple of things. This South African subsidiary, what is called Match Event Services, can you give us a breakdown of who the shareholders, who are the owners of that? Also the price of your packages and what percentage of that goes to match, and what percentage of that stays in the country with the service provider. Also, the other thing, these buses that you pulling this 400-odd buses, are they being shipped in specially for this event and then being shipped out again? Out of South Africa, where do these extra buses come from? Because one presumes they're not lying idle around the country. Thanks.
Honourable Marcus, then Honourable Kwanai, then over to Max.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is a very nice presentation. I think what I want to know, in terms of transport, I have to cover all the other companies, but then I'm looking at the transportation. This doesn't involve public people, the taxis, you know, that is a cry of the transport, private transport. They are complaining that they are not going to benefit from FIFA. That's why there is the fight of the artists and all those. They are saying they are not charities in this mode of transportation. They think that everything is going to be taken over by other people, but they are not going to benefit as taxi owners. I think then, if you can show us clear how I'm accommodating them. And also, I hope that is that the communities, there is a crime that Arab BNBs are not included. They were told of greatness. But then, how to grade themselves? They're not getting the information that who can come and grade their accommodation, BNBs. They were told to renovate their BNBs. They spend their lot of money renovating those houses. At the end, no vote now is coming up to come and grade their house so that they can benefit to this FIFA World Cup coming next year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me first welcome the presentation. It's very informative. But I have to say, this committee is so fortunate that we received this presentation, the same as that we received from the LOC when it visited us. It visited us as a committee, we requested to come. And also, the presentation from the LOC when we are all committees that are having the concern on the state of this World Cup issue. But my question really is on one, it's from the MED side. I'm sure Matt is aware of something I wanted to see from the apartheid era. And this parliament is one of the people who wanted to see the strike of balance. People who were disadvantaged in the past, getting something from this government. That's why you heard the word like BEESMMEs. And I'm sure members of this committee were very key on the SMMEs and BEEs and the rural people, rural masses. We are very concerned about that, whether rural masses are also involved in this setup. But my question is men satisfied if the organizations of the accommodation in the country and the transportation in the country, so as when those visitors came to South Africa, they must be welcomed and welcomed in a warm way in the country. If it's so, can MES maybe give us the experience of any other country which has hold the metal that we are going to face, having the same experience or the problems or the challenges like South Africa today, that has actually succeeded in hosting the World Cup in the past, where MES was also involved. I just wanted to find out because I take it as if that us from South Africa is different because we have two sectors of the community that differed in the past and wanted to merge to make one community at the end of the day. So maybe even my question really is to merge. Are you really at this moment can be proud to say now I'm satisfied that according to the accommodations in South Africa and the transportation in South Africa, the hospitality in South Africa, indeed you have done something that people who come to South Africa, they will feel again that if South Africa can beat again to win the World Cup, we can come again to South Africa.
Thank you. Over to you. But let me promise you that Bafana, like good red wine, will take time to mellow. And once it mellows, then thank you.
Thank you. That's a comforting thought. I'm going to struggle to get through all the questions, so I may need a little bit of help from the original person that asked the question, so I'll do my best. But if I fail to answer your question, just remind me what it was about so that I can reply. random selection draw, how can you make sure that I get the opening match to watch the final final? The answer to that question is, please go to an FMB branch before Monday, or get online today before Monday, because we still have tickets available to follow Bafana Bafana that include the opening match. Don't wait till after Monday, because at the moment it's first come, first serve, and it's available. So all you have to do is get online, select the categories, select the category tickets you wish to buy, and order your tickets. You can order up to 4 series to follow Bafana Bafana. And most ticket categories are still available. If you try to do the same with German, you find that it's sold out, except Category 4, because German fans in Germany cannot buy Category 4 tickets. So you go online before Monday. Right now is first come, first serve, and there are surprisingly still a number of series to follow South Africa, and they include Bafana Bafana. It's as simple as that. If you try to buy a team-specific ticket series so far, and an individual match ticket, you will have been thrown out of the website. You couldn't have purchased individual match tickets and team-specific tickets for exactly the same reason that you mentioned before, which is that there would always be the potential of a clash between your afternoon match in Polokwane and your evening match in Bloemfontein. So there shouldn't be people out there who have individual match tickets and a TST with a potential clash. That's the answer to what I believe was your second question. In terms of the price of the hospitality, we have different levels of service. You can buy a private suite. You can have a table in a shared suite. Or you can have the so-called FIFA business seat, which is a category one seat with food and beverage, typically in a tent within the perimeter of the stadium. The one I have just described, the FIFA business seat, which is the most affordable, is priced at $950 US. And that's only available in US dollars. Now, just to give you an idea, the price of hospitality packages compared to 2006 were priced at 60% of the price we had for 2006. So, in terms of value for money, the hospitality program for 2010 is more affordable than that of Germany, but it's still an expensive experience. One of the reasons for that is that you get more than just a ticket, you get all your catering inside, but more importantly, there is a license fee to be paid as a hospitality right holder. So just as much as that, sponsor pays $150 million to be affiliated to the event. In terms of the hospitality license fee, the price was $120 million US. So everybody who buys a hospitality package is contributing to paying that license. It's a reality. And those revenue streams, they don't go into somebody's wealth. It goes into the benefit of football in general. So it's a contribution, it's a financial contribution. Most of our hospitality customers, have to be said, are companies. Now, if you are AFSA, you can pay 50 or 60 million to become a national supporter, like SMB did. Or you buy a big five hospitality package at $1.5 million and entertain your guests using hospitality. So it's a different way of capturing revenues from particular from companies. And by the way, the type of business is a step down on price. So if hospitality in a suite is about 60% what it was in 2006, the FIFA business seat is significantly cheaper. For example, the cheapest hospitality suite is 1,500 in terms of the hotels, there's a misperception out there that the remit of Max is only to look after the FIFA commercial affiliates, the teams, the officials, the broadcasters, the media. That is not the case. In fact, one of these slides that I took the liberty of adding on the accommodation section was to show the very significant proportion of rooms that are exclusively reserved for members of the general public. So if I can show you in this slide, you will see the proportion that is, no, in fact, it's not one of the slides. I'm so used to this presentation that I thought I had the slide. But I can tell you that 43% of the universe of rooms we have contracted are exclusively reserved for members of the general public. And that is sold to the general public either through FIFA.com as a room or through the tour operator program as a match deal package where you get your tickets, your transportation, ground and air transportation, and your accommodation. So a very significant proportion of our inventory is used for that purpose. I think that, if I may suggest, cover the gentleman's questions. Is that correct?
Thank you very much.
Now, let's come to the very tough questions from the lady. I think your questions, if I may say, may probably be best directed to the ambassador, if I may suggest. So I'll keep those because I don't think that they were pertinent to my team, if I may. In terms of the ladies' questions, the ownership of Match Event Services. Match Event Services is a wholly owned subsidiary of Match Services, which is a Swiss company. And Match Services is in turn a wholly owned subsidiary of Byron PLC, which is a UK company. And Byron PLC is a privately owned company owned by a single family, which is more number of shareholders. Does that answer your question?
So then I presume that the only South African shareholding would be through the best, and that they're the only South African company that might benefit from it.
Forgive me. Your question was about Match Event Services.
Yes.
I'm just giving you the situation of Match Event Services. There is another company called Match Event Hospitality, and that is where Peter is one of the shareholders. So there are two separate companies. The only difference is that Byron is a shareholder of both. In as far as Match Event Services, Byron is the sole owner. In terms of the Match Event Hospitality, there are essentially four shareholders. There is Bitte, there is Infront, there is Dentsu, and then there is Byron. Okay. Then the next question was almost impossible to answer, but not because I'm trying to be evasive, but simply because it really is not straightforward. You ask, what is the percentage that Match retains from the services itself? And what is retained by the service provider. Yes? In terms of ticketing, we act purely as a service company and as a sales agent. So most of the revenue eventually goes to the local organizing committee. They are the principal beneficiary, but they are the sole recipients of what's called the base price of the ticket. The base price of the ticket is one of three parts within the face price of a ticket. So the face price is what people would pay for the ticket, and that has a VAT component and a service fee component, and then the base price. The base price is entirely paid to the local organizing committee. In terms of hotels, in terms of accommodation, which I think is probably the area you were most interested in, the situation is as follows. Part of our remit from FIFA visa is to deliver accommodation at fair price. In the contract that we use to contract hotels during the bid process, when the countries are bidding to stage the World Cup, there is a standard contract called the FIFA World Cup Hotel Agreement that invites hoteliers to sign during the bid process in support of the bid. And in there is a price formula. The price formula is the so-called RAT rate, the published rate, the general public rate of the hotels in 2007, adjusted by inflation to deliver a RAT rate for 2010. So the idea was for hoteliers to confirm their published rate for June, July 2007, look at inflation for 2007, 6, and 5, and assume that the same inflation would apply to 2008, 9, and 10, so that we could commence sales in 2007 with a confirmed price. Now, from the right rate, a discount of 30% is provided to MACH. So what MACH actually pays the hotel is 70% of that right rate. Now, in the industry, discounts of 30, 40, even 50% are quite normal. If you go to a hotel, they will tell you that a wholesaler, which is what MACH is, which then sells tour operators and travel agents, whatever, would get a typically a larger percentage than a 30% reduction to the back rate. What's also happening in South Africa is that there is no longer such a thing as a back rate. Most hotel groups no longer have a published rate. What they do is they have a so-called yield management approach to rates, where they look at what occupancy they can expect next week and adjust the prices accordingly. So there is an ever-changing scenario. Today you may go into a hotel and pay 2,000 rand and then find that for next week those rooms are at half the price. That's part of optimizing the revenue. Very difficult now to say what is the right rate of a particular room type in a particular hotel on a given period of time. So it's no longer as simple as it used to be in the old days when you publish your prices next year, and then you offer various discounts depending on your season. Now, there is a misperception out there that what in fact happens is that you have the normal price or the right rate of the hotel, and that we add 10-30%. That's been the way that the media has elected to reflect the pricing, but that's not the case. You have that price, which we never exceed. We would never sell a room above the hotel general public rate. But we do pay 70% of that. And what we do is we provide discounts of 10 or 20% depending on the type of customer that goes into those hotels. So for example, the LOC would get a 20% discount. FIFA would get a 20% discount. Commercial affiliates get a 10% discount. So the maximum price when they sell at is the hotel's published rate. But we then discount depending on who the customers are. That pricing structure is approved by FIFA from the outset. So it's not what we choose to sell, but what we are required to sell. Does that answer your second question? I won't go into transportation because that's difficult. We sell a seat in a coach. If that's the only seat sold, and we're still paying for the coach, so we incur a very heavy loss. On the other hand, we sell more than 80% of the seats in the coach, we start making a profit. So it's a very difficult thing to say. What I will tell you is that the daily hire rates for coaches are surprisingly high for 2010. And that, I think, possibly reflects the lack of supply. It's a free market. So I think that certainly that's one area where I think we have had to probably deal with higher prices than we would have ideally liked to have. In terms of the hotels, if I can just take a step back, I think you have every right to be very proud of the way that the key players in the hotel community have acted. All the major hotel chains have very much lived up to the spirit of the agreement that was signed during the bid, because terms of the 420 coaches, they are being delivered to the Department of Transportation since last month. So there's a continuous flow of coaches coming from the assembly line. And those will be brand new coaches that Autopax will operate in South Africa beyond 2010. They are training in excess of 2,000 drivers, and I think that that's going to have a very significant material impact on South African tourism in years to come. So the coaches are not necessarily here, but they're on their way here. I may say, I think I've answered all the ladies' questions. If I may then move to the next set of questions. The problem that we have in transportation and dealing with the taxi industry is that, well, I'm sure that many of the units that we will deploy will come from the smaller organizations. We have a subcontracting process where we contract the services from a company like ICAPA, who takes legal responsibility for performance, insurance, etc. And they then, in turn, subcontract a lot of the smaller players within their community. So I can imagine that a lot of the services that will be provided to the participating tour operators to manage and others will come from the owner-driver sector, but not in direct contractual transactions. It's very difficult for a company like Max that is macro-managing an event to contract individual units, which is what would happen if it was self or individual owner drivers. In terms of bed and breakfast, it's different. We have gone that extra mile, and we do contract directly with each bed and breakfast. We have a lot of bed and breakfasts that provide only two rooms, and we still have a 20-page contract to govern that relationship. As to the distribution of complimentary tickets for anybody, I have to say that we don't decide that. There is a protocol that the organizing committee has in terms of who gets what complimentary tickets. In terms of bed and breakfast, I think that the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa have done a tremendous job. They've graded hundreds of establishments. Many of them were motivated to become graded because they wanted to be part of the FIFA World Cup. I don't know that there is a lot of bed and breakfast places that want to be graded that have not been graded. I think it's more a question of some bed and breakfast not electing to be graded. So obviously, there's a cost inherent in that, and even though the Tourism Enterprise Partnership and the Grading Council of South Africa have subsidized to an extent the grading process, I think that it's those who elect not to be graded that are not graded. In terms of previous countries that can perhaps compare to South Africa in terms of legacy, in terms of the challenges or the benefits that we have encountered in South Africa, I think it's very difficult to compare South Africa to anything that I've experienced. Probably my country, I'm Mexican, maybe Mexico was the closest we had to South Africa. Certainly, as far as Germany is concerned, we had the benefit of fantastic transportation infrastructure. Transportation was never an issue for Max. We didn't have to worry as to how Peter would get to Dusseldorf from wherever. It was self-serving. So transportation is certainly something that has not been experienced in recent more than as an event issue. So Mexico is probably the nearest I can think of, but it's so far away that I was wearing shorts at the time, so you can imagine how long ago that was. Chairman, I think I've answered all the questions, or I've tried to answer all the questions.
Okay, thank you very much. In fact, about a few weeks ago, there were concerns about pricing for accommodation that would impact to tourism in the long term. But I think you've accommodated all the concerns. There were quotations of around 25,000. Around the room, but I think you have addressed all those concerns in the process, and by saying that you adopted services may create a perception or that is not in line with the perceptions that we want to create for our country's experiences in the long term, but that seems not to be the case. The question of poverty. I think the question of poverty does not fall within the ambit of MENCH, which is management of accommodation, ticketing, computer and hospitality. But definitely it falls on the door of the government and how it uses its resources. Perhaps we can learn from experiences in Germany in terms of growth in the GDP or perhaps spin-offs that were coming from the event. So let us then perhaps not put issues of poverty to the door of MENCH. They do not belong there because it is not their mandate. But we were satisfied by the presentation, and thank you very much, Mr. Byron. And if you are going to go now without having the benefit of listening to the His Excellency, the German Ambassador, I would say farewell and thank you very much for the presentation. And then at 10 past 11, and that is going to be exact, we shall be having a presentation from His Excellency, Mr. Dieter. I do not know whether it is pronounced as Halaf. Halaf, yes. Ambassador of the Federal Republic of Germany. That is the correct name. And once more, thank you very much, Mr. Byron. We wish you all the best and providing us with the wonderful experiences of the World Cup. And looking at everything, I think you are going to enrich our experiences in South Africa, and then the value of the experiences is enhanced the way I see it by the availability of these 10 key service providers in terms of accommodation, management, ticketing, IT, and those types of things, because otherwise every time there was a World Cup, people would have to look around for project managers for all these, and then who would not be having the necessary insight, experience, and perhaps effectiveness and efficiency required in an event of the magnitude of the FIFA World Cup. Once more, thank you very much.
If I may just take one more minute of your time, thank you for the opportunity. Valuable experience for me. It's not every day that I come to present this group. I would like to particularly thank the ambassador for having participated in my presentation. I wish I could stay a little longer, but unfortunately, I don't have to go, but I know you are going to benefit greatly from the ambassador's presentation. Thank you so much. Thank you for your
time. Let's prepare ourselves for the next session. And the next session we shall have to complete at 12:30. That is the time we will be given. And for flight. Okay, we can release you at 12:15 as long as the committee is enriched by His Excellency, Mr. Halaf. What we would like to have from Mr. Halaf, His Excellency, is perhaps the legacy of the World Cup, not foresee the costs, that type of thing. Because if you do not have the experience, you do not have insight into all the impacts on institutions that an event or a mega event like the World Cup may have. And then, if so, what measures then, and how do you then respond? Over to you, Your Excellency.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I try to be very brief in my introductory remarks in order to leave more space for the interaction with you. One preliminary remark following up what Chairman Byron said, as far as the performance of our German national team was concerned in the up-run to 2006, there was a lot of criticism of our team. They lost many friendly and preparatory teams, and nobody in Germany thought, you know, they would make it to the second round. So I would like to ask you, I mean, be generous and try to help and support Bafana Bafana. I saw Bafana Bafana perform in the Confed Cup, and the boys did an excellent job. And I think, you know, they are a little bit like our German team. They start at a very low level, but then they make it up, they improve, and has them be not too critical with them. It turned out, you know, that we underwent the same experience. I would like, Honorable Chairperson, dear members of Parliament, to speak in my introductory part on three topics. First of all, how did Germany benefit tourism-wise from the event in 2006? Second, what were the institutions, what was the architecture in the tourism sector that contributed that we came out so successfully from the event? And then thirdly, what are the lessons you might want to learn, what are the areas you might want to look into it? Let me so first of all start, you know, with the questions: how do Germany capitalize on 2006 event? The first remark: we improved tremendously our image as tourist destination, and facts and figures are very obvious on that. The influx of tourists, especially during the four, 5 weeks of the tournament, increased considerably. We registered a 12.5 million overnight stays increase by foreign visitors during that time. During the 5 weeks of the event, we had 12.5 million additional overnight stays from foreign visitors. This marks an increase of about 19.3% only during the event. The huge number, of course, you know, of football fans visiting us was certainly bolstered by the participation of our neighboring countries, and we are a country in the center of Europe. As you know, there is no other country in central Europe who has more neighbors than we, and of course, this helped a lot. To give you some exemplary figures, noteworthy was especially the increase from the UK, about 35%, from the US, 20%. The US is a very, very large and very important market also for you. Mind you that in the first two places, the majority of the tickets went to the US, then the UK, and then Germany. So it's a very important market, and also from Sweden. I have distributed in the folder we have circulated to you one brochure which is quite conspicuous as far as facts and figures are concerned. And in this brochure, the 2006 FIFA World Cup, you will find, I think on page 4, for instance, a diagram that shows you exactly the increase of foreign tourist inflow in the 12 host cities in June, July 2006. And there is you know, we had 12 host cities. The diagram starts with Frankfurt and finishes with Stuttgart. And there is one element I would like to draw your attention to, honorable members. That is, we had a dramatic increase, you know, in foreign visitors, but on the other hand, we had a decrease of national domestic visitors. So I have been hearing quite often in my interaction with South Africans that many of them said, "Oh, when this World Cup event takes place, we just escape and go away." So you have to take this in account, but the overall balance is, of course, very, 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 very positive. We had, all in all, during the 4 weeks, during 4 to 5 weeks, we had all in all, according to our statistics, about 2 million visitors from abroad. And we had, in addition to that, about 1 million guests from our neighboring countries who just came for the day without staying overnight. This is possible from France, the Netherlands, or the Benelux countries, and also even, you know, from Great Britain. So all in all, you know, we had about 3 million visitors, 1 million just coming for the day, and not only once, but various times, partying then through the night and going home, you know, the following day, or returning the same day. But this positive trend of foreign tourism influx continued for the rest of 2006, and also in the following years. We had a growth rate in 2007 and 2008 of about 3.4 to 4% in tourist influx from abroad. In 2006 alone, you know, we registered an increase of foreign visitors to the extent of about 5.3%. So this clearly shows that on the tourism side, you know, there is increase, and you can expect, you know, a considerable, substantial increase also next year in South Africa. Now, what did this mean in real economic terms? Only in the area of tourism, our experts found out that the added value from the increased influx of foreign tourists amounted in 2006 to about 3 billion euro. That is in current currency exchange rate 33 billion rand. One interesting fact we noticed also, the foreigners, when they came to Germany, they were very generous in their spending patterns. We found out, or the surveys found out, that the foreign guests, on the average, spend 2.5 or 3 times more than a regular foreign tourist. This is an interesting fact, I think, you know, which has to be kept in mind. In the tourism sector alone, between 50 and 60,000 additional jobs have been created. 50 to 60,000 jobs, additional jobs. 20,000 of them then permanently. 20,000 of them permanently. Another interesting facet in this area is 3/4 of the foreign visitors who traveled to Germany for the World Cup came for the first time to our countries. And 16% combined their World Cup trip with the holidays in Germany. This is important for the interest of the honorable member who has asked, you know, what are they doing between the games. 16% evidently combined the football with holiday. 10% took the opportunity to visit family and friends. What has impressed us most, honorable members, is then about 90% of our foreign ministers said they would recommend Germany to others as a holiday destination. So, I mean, we not only had an increased influx of tourists, but we also, you know, had a very positive multiplying effect by those who came and went then back, you know, to their home countries, lobbying for Germany as a tourism destination. So we found that this is a very, very noteworthy and also long-term sustainable positive effect, which cannot be measured immediately, but which has long-term positive effects, you know, on the country and on the image. The second point I would like to mention to you is concerns the image, the nation branding. The World Cup 2006 changed the image of our country substantially. And I think this was for us, Chairperson, the most important positive result of 2006. As you might know, we we were perceived before the World Cup with certain stereotypes, and the stereotypes are on the table as being very disciplined, as being very diligent, as being a little bit egg-headed, you know, a bit of a grumbling lot. And our country's image was reputation was very much biased towards the economic and industrial strength, and not so much to its human, cultural, and tourist qualities. But during the World Cup, Germany and we Germans, we showed our real assets, if I may allow to put it this way, as being warm-hearted, open-minded, tolerant, and generous people who also know how to party. Nobody believed that the Germans could ever party, but we showed the world that we can party. Now, that the brand Germany changed with positive repercussions within our society too, and it led to an overall positive, improved image abroad. And some analysts went as far as stating that with the successful hosting of the World Cup, Germany has found a new inner balance, both reflecting the demographic changes within and the development towards a multicultural society. As you all know, I mean, we are a nation as split and divided as you have been until 1994, and I think, you know, it was to be noted, you know, that Germany also grew together and developed, you know, a new self-esteem from within, but also projected a very positive image abroad, and we are still benefiting from this. Now, the key notion used to describe this phenomenon is the notion of enlightened and happy patriotism. As I've mentioned, we are still working on our very difficult history, and due to the instrumentalization of the nationalism by the Nazis between 1933 and 1945, we post-war Germans have been very prudent and reluctant to expose a patriotic stance. But this really changed considerably during 2006. Never ever you would have seen so many flags, so many national symbols, very often carried together with national symbols of our visitors in a most relaxed and very friendly manner. And as I said, you know, the event helped to overcome the remnants of our internal East-West divide, and I think this is opens up a lot of possibilities for the ongoing reconciliation process in South Africa and to the path, you know, to further consolidating the Rainbow Nation. As far as this nation branding topic is concerned, you will also find, you know, in the leaflet, in the brochure, I had distributed some dimensions where this is shown and where the concrete statistics are reflected. We scored considerably, you know, in the dimension of cultural and heritage. We scored considerably, you know, in the human qualities. We also scored considerably, you know, in the whole area of tourism. You will find this in detail there. Now, what was key to this development, or what underpinned this strategy? I would like to mention our basic marketing concept, and that was the slogan, "A time to make friends." A time to make friends. Die Welt zu Gast bei Freunden. It's in Germany, it sounds a little bit difficult. I hope that the honorable member of parliament who was born in Berlin understands this. Die Welt zu Gast bei Freunden. A time to make friends. We were perceived before the event, you know, with the mentioned stereotypes, and our image was particularly miserable in the UK. Legions of German diplomats tried in vain to reverse it, but where they and we failed, the World Cup was successful. And this overall positive atmosphere was, of course, reinforced or was based by the level of organization, by the quality of the public transport, by the easy access to the venues, and also by the much accepted public viewing areas, and of course by the excellent security. As I've already told the honorable member of the Free State, it was for us Germans terribly difficult to get access to tickets. There were millions and millions of my fellow countrymen who couldn't get tickets because the run to the stadium was so enormous, and due to the fact, you know, that we had to work on this discipline, the concept of the public viewing areas gained this enormous strength. And if you would mind to look also once again on the brochure, there is at one stage in the brochure, there are the figures as far as the public viewing areas are concerned, which is titled Football Fever in Germany. And it's really impressive. Around 22 million visitors, mostly Germans, but also foreigners, 22 million people visited the FIFA fan areas and FIFA fan parks and public viewing areas. Alone in Berlin, we had 9 million people who were following the matches and partying after the matches and before the matches in Berlin. At that time, I was living right in the center of Berlin, near the Potsdamer Platz, and I must confess to you, I only made it twice to the public fan parks, because also the public fan parks in the center of Berlin were totally overcrowded, and from a certain stage, security closed the effort. And I just made it, you know, to one public viewing event, which involved your African neighboring country, Angola. Now, this public viewing, of course, helped very much the interaction and the communication between the locals and the foreigners. And I think, you know, the perception of 2006 as a relaxed, as an informal, as a successful event, bringing people together, is very much also due to the fact, you know, that so few people got tickets to the stadium, and so many people had to make it, you know, to this public viewing site. Well, yes. In conclusion, one could say that the change in the brand Germany was the most positive effect. Also, you know, with repercussions in the tourism sector. And what we can note now, 3 years after, that this positive change has proven to be sustainable. There is a nation brands index. I will make you available all details in the next days. One can say that nowadays there are various aspects which rank very 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 high in the nation branding. That is not only the industrial and economic perception, not only the perception of a country as a modern society, but equally important, you know, are the whole soft issues like human warmth, like hospitality, like culture, and also environment. Culture, human warmth, environment is evidently, you know, worldwide are important areas, dimensions, which coin a reputation and the image of a country. So I think, you know, you might be well advised to have a look into this, but according to my experience in the past 2 years, there is no need, you know, for South Africans to increase their human wealth and hospitality, because I think this is one of the greatest assets you as a host country will be able to roll out. Our international image image and our nation brand is nowadays in a very good health. I think the investment in our marketing and promotion effects yielded very, very, very positive results. We also found out in surveys and academic research that we, as a country, benefited a lot from strong visual icons from the built cultural heritage. Nowadays, the Brandenburg Gate, you know, I think is as well known as the Tour de Eiffel in Paris or the Statue of Liberty in Washington, and very often when you have pictures from Germany, very soon the Brandenburg Gate appears, and the central events in Berlin in 2006 were all organized around the Brandenburg Gate. So people, foreigners, use, you know, they need certain entrance points, you know, and visual icons are a very important concept in this. And our experts tell us that this also enhances, you know, the tourism brand of a country. And my last remark concerning nation brand. The experts say, tell us that the national images move very slowly, but you have to work on it. I think South Africa offers, due to its cultural legacy, due to its natural beauty, enormous possibilities of marketing itself. The second part of my introduction remarks: what were the institutions involved in the preparatory phase? I would like to refer above all to the German National Tourist Board. You will find also in your folder information in detail on that. National Tourist Board was the main stakeholder and the driver. In close cooperation with the German government and the German Football Association, three poles, tourism, government, and football association, that was the institutional infrastructure, architecture, which underpinned the whole marketing events. The tourist board started almost 3 years before the event, marketing the World Cup. It arranged more than 1,000 exhibitions worldwide. It organized about 5,000 study trips all around the world. It rolled out more than 25 million print products. It, of course, set up a special internet portal, which was accessed by 75 million users alone in 2006. We not only have, you know, the Brandenburg Gate, dear chairperson, as a national cultural icon, we have also, you know, a personal and human icon, which is Franz Beckenbauer. We refer to him as our Kaiser. Also, you know, we abolished, you know, that kind of undemocratic regime many years ago.
Monarchy.
Yes. But Kaiser, the Franz Beckenbauer, he visited as president of the LOC all 32 participating countries with a lot of impact, drawing huge crowds and also getting a very positive board press coverage. And as far as the marketing and implementation of the concept, A Time to Make Friends, is concerned, I would like to highlight three programs, three approaches, which might be of interest also to South Africa. First of all, we rolled out what we call a nationwide service and hospitality campaign. And the aim of that campaign was to transform this motto, A Time to Make Friends, into something concrete. And in that endeavor, the Tourism Board coordinated with all other stakeholders the various measures and projects of the campaign triggered widespread public interest among Germans and also international guests. We had a web shop of the nationwide service and hospitality campaign that was set up for organizations, for hotels, for companies, and for the tourism industry. All in all, before the event, around 50,000 employees from the entire tourism service chain had prepared themselves for the World Cup through this campaign with various forums, training activities. We also using a training manual, and we also, of course, made available an e-learning tool set. So this national training campaign and hospitality campaign was, I think, you know, the basis for the training of the stakeholders in the hospitality area sector. Further elements of this campaign within the communication concept include, of course, TV spots, which increased the awareness in the whole country as good host for the nation. We also set into motion Germany's Service Champion 2006 competition, which was spearheaded by Franz Beckenbauer. There was a Germany Service Champion 2006 award. And we also included, of course, targeted the international media and press representatives as very important multipliers in the campaign. We had thousands of international journalists attending seminars, conferences, and this turned out to be very, very helpful in projecting a positive image. The second program I would like to mention, the government rolled out a cultural and artistic program in the framework of 2006. We were very eager not to just organize this event, but we were also eager to offer a forum to showcase Germany's cultural heritage, cultural diversity, which is as diverse or almost as diverse as South Africans. And the key vehicle to implement this concept was the National Artistic and Cultural Program, for which the government, federal government, made available funds to the extent of 350 million rand from the federal budget. Germany was the first country to initiate such a diverse artistic and cultural program within the scope of the World Cup. But its ratio was that football is not only a sport, but it has to be considered also as a cultural mass phenomena that can cross borders both in social, geographic, and political sense. And out of 350 applications from the ground level, from the municipal level, from all walks of life, we had about 48 projects chosen within that program. We had dance performances, we had drama performances, we had musical events, we had festivals, and this was a very important tool also to attract the attention of our foreign visitors. All in all, by the end of July, we had within that national cultural and artistic program organized in 45 German cities more than almost 200 performances, concerts, and exhibitions. We also had a number of PR tools rolled out, like image film, very successful, titled Welcome to Germany, Land of Ideas. This was produced in 10 languages. You have to make sure, you know, that all your football fans around the world understand you. So you have to be language sensitive, you know, in your PR exercise, and of course, you know, this main image film, Welcome to Germany, Land of Ideas, was of course launched. How could it otherwise be at New Year's Eve in 2005-2006 at the Berlin Brandenburg Gate in presence of Franz Beckenbauer? So we brought all the icons together at that New Year's. briefly dwell, you know, on the federal government's press office participation. Although there, the federal press office had a role to play in close cooperation with the partners, with the Football Association and with the Tourism Board. We targeted, of course, the journalists from at home and abroad. We organized a hell of a lot of visits for them. We also included the German missions abroad, you know, in the PR exercise. All our embassies and consulates all around the world accompanied the run-up to the World Cup with a bundle of programs, of PR events and campaigns with articles and so on and so on. There is also a role, but I can assure you that I'm working very closely with my distinguished colleague Ambassador Eddie Funde in Berlin, and he's doing the same in the South African Embassy. The South African Embassy is really a center of the PR activities right in the center of Berlin, and I only can laud and commend what the South African Embassy in Berlin is really doing. Perhaps, you know, I should stop here. Three concluding remarks. First, tourism marketing must begin as early as possible. You must bring together all stakeholders. You must have, you know, a business plan, and the most important thing, you must have a joint concept. You must have a joint concept. This concept, you know, a time to make friends, turned out to be the red line in all our activities, which guided the activities of all stakeholders in the different levels. You know, we are a federal country. You know, we have a national level, we have a provincial level, we have municipalities, and all levels, you know, were guided, you know, by this principle. You know, and much of the success, you know, within our foreign ministers was due that we really kept to that. To that principle, time to make friends. Besides infrastructure, which is very important for the well-being of the foreign visitors, we have found out, you know, that this cultural dimension is very, very important. So I think, you know, South Africa has there a lot of comparative advantages for many other countries. You are cultural. Highly diverse country. You should always have in mind, you know, that the ordinary football fan does not only want, you know, to see a football match, but he also wants, you know, to get to know more about the country, know more about its culture, more about the tradition, and I think this has to be accommodated somewhere in the planning. Very interestingly enough, we also found out that one-third of our foreign visitors who came to the World Cup even took an interest in our language, which is a terribly difficult Germanic language. But surveys found out, you know, that one-third of our visitors wanted, you know, to take up German as a future language, and want to start to learn German, which is really very, very nice. And the third aspect is a focus on good service, the hospitality campaign that we run, that I have been referred to, was very important, was very instrumental in making feel our foreign visitors, you know, at home. I can give you a very concrete example from my home federal state of Baden-Württemberg, which is at the southwestern part of Germany. The small town of Wangen, which is a town of 55,000 inhabitants, you know, in a beautiful countryside, you know, in the pre-Alpine area, mountainous area, hosted the national team of Togo. And can you imagine that at the arrival of the Togo national team, can you imagine how many inhabitants of Wangen were at the streets to welcome them? 25,000. Almost the whole town was there to welcome the national team of Togo, and the community, the municipality of Wangen, of that town and its inhabitants, accompanied Togo, you know, throughout all their stay, and out of the fact that Togo had its base camp in that small town, developed a very, very strong partnership between that municipal town, you know, and Togo. So, you know, we have now high schools who are school exchange. We have Togolese coming to Wangen to get professional vocational training. And so this is a very nice example of what can happen if you organize people-to-people contact, you know, on the basis of a nicely well-thought-through strategy concept. You have asked me a lot of other things, chairperson, with relation of stadia, with relation of transport, but I would prefer, you know, to answer this, you know, in the question answer session. To conclude, I just want to mention, following up, taking up what I commented, you know, on the very intensive and nice and good relationship we have with the South African Embassy in Berlin. Also the embassy under my leadership, we are doing quite a lot. You will find a very nice example of a joint endeavor between the German embassy in Pretoria and the South African embassy in Berlin. We, for instance, in March, April this year, we worked together with South African Tourism on a very nice supplement to the Stern, which is the most read and published German weekly, with a very positive message saying South Africa, South Africa, your travel, your experience, your history. You know, we were taking up our experience. We were trying, you know, to put it, you know, on a cultural human touch side. And I think the Stern is read by more than 10 million Germans every week. We on our side, we have established a bilingual website, which you find also in your the link you find also in your folder, which is called Germany South African Football, Germany in 2006, South Africa in 2010. Let's stay friends. We titled it Let's Stay Friends. This is what we are really after, and you find that a hell of a lot of information. And we developed this homepage in order as a central platform with our football fans in Germany. It's both in German and in English, and we have assembled, you know, very important information on host cities, on travel preparations, on sports in South Africa, on German projects. My embassy is running quite a number of projects, you know, in the uprun of 2010. You will find all this detailed information on our homepage. Thank you so much, and I'm very happy to answer the questions to the best of my possibilities. Thank you.
What an exciting presentation. Indeed, it was exciting. And as you were going on, I asked myself, how much more bread should we bake? How much more meat should we have? How much more water should we have? How much more beer should we have? How much more wine should we brew? I mean, this is something next to the actual experience. There was tourism growth, economic growth, and above all, nation building, the bridge between the East and the West, which was a problem for a long time for the Germans. And the World Cup reached the depth that no professional diplomat can reach. And as you were making a presentation, I realized the benefits. But also, the benefits are underpinned by good service. That is the message. By professionalism, by PR in the language, not the language you like, but the language that is going to be effective whether you like it or you do not. And this culture, exposure of culture, working around joint concepts, common purpose for all the stakeholders in the country, the partnership between a small town of Wangen and Togo, where about half the population went to welcome the team. I mean, it's quite an experience. 12.5 million people, more people, additional stays in 5 weeks. It was quite an experience, and it makes, when you think about the stereotype of the ordinary people of German people, these precise machine-like people that are engineers, accountants, architects, working to precision in terms of time and so forth, without perhaps thinking about the human element. And as you are presenting now, one gets to know much more about the feel, the warmth, the hospitality of the Germans, which I think, even if we read everything on the internet, we could not have thought. Thank you very much, Mr. Hall, your excellence. Over to you, Mr. Krumbach. And then after Mr. Krumbach, Honorable Krumbach would be Honorable Shin, then Honorable Njobe, and Honorable Farah, in that order. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just two questions. The statistics that Herr Haller mentioned about the after effects of the World Cup, you mentioned, for example, a 19.3% increase in overnight visits. And I think you yourself, Chair, repeated the number of visits, 12.5 million, I think it was. What I was interested to find out is what role did the federal government play interacting with the football authorities, FIFA, and related stakeholders during and presumably after the World Cup to, in fact, facilitate that sustained increase in tourism and economic activity. So I would imagine it would be quite a big coordinating exercise to actually make sure that all the benefits were reaped to their full potential. And then secondly, I have read these articles in the folder. You went quite a lot further and gave us additional information. And I was just wondering if you had, for example, copies of your address that you could email to the committee so we can benefit. That would be really useful. Vielen Dank, Eva, auf das Verschnitt.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. It's definitely quite comforting, however, for you to let us know that the instinct to run and hide from the horde of soccer fans is universal. It's definitely quite comforting to know that, because I know many people are looking at going to Berlin for the World Cup. Anyway, two things basically. How difficult is it to create these relationships in a multilingual environment? You have, you know, like we talk about the people from Togo. I mean, how do they actually cope to find their way around? You know, obviously, we're a multilingual country to start with, and then we're going to have all these strange languages. How does that affect the logistics of getting the people around from venues? Could they find their way around? And the other thing was, in your this brochure that you had, it actually intrigued me about the slide on Germany's image after the event, that value for money was the lowest criteria, 44% of people, I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's at the bottom of the scale of what people thought of Germany at the end of it. And obviously quick and easy to get there and all those other good things are at the top. But it's actually amazing because we're actually still really focusing on giving people value for money. And yet it didn't rate highly amongst the people that visited for your World Cup.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should really start by apologizing for coming late to the meeting today. It's just the events of this week, I think, which have taken my mind elsewhere, far beyond Parliament, including the Tuesday event of the FIFA World Cup here in Parliament, and the presentations that we have had today. They make one feel, you know, that July is rather too far. We want this World Cup to come. In other words, I'm thankful very much for this presentation. It makes us feel, you know, that we are very lucky in South Africa to get the opportunity to hold such a magnanimous event as the FIFA World Cup. my question is about the tourists that have come back to Germany since after 2006 FIFA World Cup in that country. Your Excellency. Of the tourists that you are coming back to Germany, would you say, how do the figures compare with those, for instance, from within Europe as a whole, and those coming from countries far away from Germany? You see, when I look at Germany in the map, it's quite central in Europe. And therefore, for people in Europe, it's not very difficult to get to Germany generally, even by land for that matter. But we in South Africa, we are right at the bottom of the continent. We are rather quite far from some of the countries in Africa and such. But what I want to find out is whether these tourists who are coming back to Germany, are they mainly from Europe, or would you say there are other tourists who come back coming from countries further away from Germany? Not just from Germany, but from Europe. Now, secondly, for us, this event, we have said it's not only about South Africa, but it's also about Africa as a whole. Because for the first time, as we all know, we are going to have a world event of this nature in Africa. And so South Africa has decided to share some of the benefits of the event. For example, there are some visitors who will be hosted or accommodated outside South Africa, and I think this is by arrangement. This is what we have learned. So we are trying to share the benefits with other countries in Africa, particularly those that are closer to South Africa. What is the situation in your country? Would you say countries around Germany, neighbors and so on, benefited from the fact that the event was hosted in Germany? Did you feel, for instance, that you had any obligation as a country to share the event with some of the countries around Germany? Thank you very much.
Now, thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. Welcoming. Very, very informative. And I have one question. How did Germany deal with the criticisms after awarding of the FIFA World Cup 2006? Maybe criticism from your media side or other people within Germany.
Tourism Board, one of the main drivers in coordinating meeting the stakeholders. In our political system, honorable member, the Ministry of Interior, we do not have a sports ministry, a ministry of sports and recreation, and like yours. Sports falls under the responsibility of the Minister of the Interior. And the Minister of the Interior is also funding all sports activities. And of course, I mean, there was a workforce at place. There was a conceptual group at place, which tried, I think, quite successfully, you know, to coordinate the stakeholders. But I think, you know, it was an exercise of organizing where all participants and all stakeholders, you know, had an equal say. I mean, there was not a political hierarchy involved. The government, of course, also was very instrumental on the PR side. Everything, you know, on the PR side was also was coordinated by the Federal Press Agency in very close contact, once again, with the Football Association, with the LOC, and with the Tourism Board. So I would say, you know, the role of the government was basically one of funding many activities, one of coordinating and driving in an institutional setup, you know, of equals. Yes, copies of my presentation. Sorry, you know, I was still having a look on it last night, so I will make it, of course, available to you. Goes without saying. I do apologize. We have I think, included sticks from our regional center, the German Information Center Pretoria, which is a center which tries via the internet to enhance relationship and interaction in the Anglophone African world, but we haven't been able, you know, to put my presentation on a stick. I will improve on that, you know, as a representative of a highly innovative and technological development country. One should expect it. I do apologize, but, you know, it's my fault. The agenda is very heavy, and I do apologize for that. Now, the second question, multilingual country, did you go about that? Well, part, you know, of the hospitality campaign was, of course, the language dimension. And we trained the stakeholders in the hospitality sector, in the tourism sector, very intensively, also as far as language skills were concerned. So although, you know, the people of Wangen, which are living at the border between the federal state of Baden-Württemberg and Bavaria, and Bavaria, you know, is a language of its own, are very often not understood in northern Germany for their dialect. But nevertheless, they started there also to learn French. They started there to learn French. And another concrete example is in Berlin, which is a very fascinating city. You have a whole lot of bus drivers and taxi drivers. And they are very, very curious, very funny lot. But even the Berlin bus drivers, who usually do not care a damn of the well-being of the usual Berlin passengers, they started, you know, a smile campaign during the World Cup. And even, you know, they started even to learn to pick up some English and some French. So language, of course, you know, is important. You cannot expect a bus driver. I mean, you cannot expect a bus driver to pick up, you know, a fluent foreign language. But, you know, the foreigner, for the interaction and for the feeling of being welcome in the country, you know, just a number of sentences high enough, and they had these manuals, you know, how do you get from A to B, and how much is the fare to the stadium, and so on. And these people were then very concretely trained, you know, and equipped with these basic skills, and I think this helped also a lot. Now, the value for money, I think it's a little bit contradictory. I do not know. And there are other results of surveys and investigations which revealed that 80% of the visitors who came for 2010 wanted to come back because they felt so much at ease. So I really cannot explain, you know, that figure, value for money. Of course, I mean, Germany is a comparatively high-priced country as far as services are concerned. I mean, an ordinary bus fare, you know, in Berlin, one way costs you €2.20. This is 25 rands, you know, one way. But you can get a ticket for the whole day for 5 or 6 euro, which is 80 rand. You can tour the whole city for use all public transport. But nevertheless, it may be, you know, that some foreign visitors perceived us, you know, to being a high cost country. By the way, you know, we in our preparations found out that in the tourism, in the South African tourism sector, especially in the hotel sector, the prices which some hotels want to charge our foreign visitors in 2010 might be a little bit exaggerated. We are in discussion with hotels in the Joburg area, especially in Joburg, where hotels are asking for prices between 400 and 700 euros per room per night, which is very expensive and which is, I think, a little bit exaggerated. So I think our experience tells us, you know, you should not overestimate, you know, the spending abilities of foreigners who come far away. I do know from our talks with our German tour operators, and Chaim Baron mentioned that 6 of them are certified by FIFA. They have bought a hell of a lot of accommodation already at fair prices. But you should not forget, you know, that also in Germany, the ordinary German football fan is a working class man, you know, who is a usual laborer, and he spends a hell of a lot, you know, for his football hobby. And our tour operators tell me, you know, that many German ordinary football fans, ordinary laborers, have already started 3 years ago to save for the event in 2010. And we should not only, you know, have in mind those who are in a position to buy business seats, but there are also those, you know, who earn average age, average wages, and who want to come. And it must be sure that they also find, you know, accommodation at a decent level, you know, at a decent price. That's only a side remark. Now, well, yes, I think your question, Honourable Member of Parliament. I think, you know, you can be really proud of being host in 2010. And I have said this on various occasions in the past. The decision by FIFA to award the hosting of 2006 to South Africa is, in my view, the most political decision FIFA has ever taken, because it brings football to a continent where football is very strong and where FIFA never was before. So I think, you know, it's a highly political decision, and I think, you know, it will really help very much to improve the perception of South Africa, of Southern Africa, and the whole of Africa in the few months to come. I can tell you, Honourable Member, from my talks with the German media people, that they will make use of the World Cup 2010 to really broaden the picture of Africa by broadcasting and documentaries, by trying to portray, you know, an image of Africa which is not governed by the stereotypes we Germans have been victims of, but which really portrays your country and your region and your continent in a very, very broad-based aspect. And I think, you know, this is a very, very important long-term political and economic and social effect of the World Cup, at least as far as the community. communication in Germany is concerned. And we have already had two or three teams of German journalists around and TV teams who have been shooting documentaries. The last one only three, 4 weeks ago under the title South Africa on the Way to the Rainbow Nation. And I think, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to showcase your country. Now, your question as far as the figures of you know, the breakdown, you know, of the countries of origin are concerned, I don't have it available. I only can tell a big part, you know, of the increase was really made, you know, by the European neighbors, especially, you know, from the UK, but also from the southern, from our southern neighbors, Italy and Portugal. But noteworthy was also the increase, you know, that came from the US. The US is a very lucrative tourism market, and the US is, you know, the Americans are people who like to travel. I mean, they like to have a good time. Football is on the uprise, on the rise there. The Americans have been a developing country football-wise a long time. And now, you know, I think they are an emerging country, or even, you know, they are now a fully footballized country because they did extremely well. Also in the Confed Cup, mind you, they beat Brazil in the finals until the 45 minutes. You know, the Brazilian players went to the break, you know, with their heads really broken. You know, the Americans led to the in the first half 2-0. If you will remember, I would suggest, you know, that the American market is a very important market, and with the overcoming of the economic crisis, the Americans will certainly restart, you know, to travel intensively, and you should have that market well on the screen. Another market. Which is not a mass market, but which is a high-level segment market, that are the football fans from the Arab world. We had quite a lot, you know, of high-ranking visitors, you know, from the Arab world. Mind you, the Emirates, you know, the carrier of Dubai, of the Al Maktoum family, is one of the main sponsors of FIFA, and as far as high spending is concerned, and as far as the use, you know, of the lounges and suites are concerned, visitors from the Arab world, you know, are really high spender. Did the neighbors benefit from the World Cup? Not really, to my knowledge. But, madam, you know, Germany is part of the European Union. We share all the goodies and the baddies. But I couldn't say, you know, actually, you know, that they benefited. As I told you, football fans from our next door neighbors usually came just for the day and did not stay overnight because traveling is so easy. But I have, at least in my my research, I haven't found any indication that the neighbors benefited. But this will be, I think, a little bit different, you know, in 2010. Because I think the government is quite clear, your government is quite clear. They always said, you know, that it's an event of Southern Africa, of the country, of the homeland, of the region, but also of the continent. And I do know that our tour operators already also made bookings, you know, in some neighboring countries. So now the last questions on criticism. Well, sometimes I feel, you know, that German media and the South African media have very much in common as far as, you know, as the criticism is concerned. We had a lot of criticism, you know, in the 2 years before the event 2006, not only with regard to the team, which was torn apart by the critics of the media. But also, you know, we had also, you know, the same kind of stories you find here. The stadium will not be ready. The infrastructure, the public transport will not be optimal. And, you know, we had a lot of security concerns. Not as far, you know, as all the crime is concerned, but, you know, due to the fact that we are such an open society, due to the fact, you know, that we have open frontiers, because within the European Union we have a Schengen system including 16 European countries, and you can travel freely across the border without any control. You are just controlled in the point of entry of the Schengen regime system. And there was a hell of a lot of concerns and fear, you know, about terrorism attack. And this was also broadly discussed in the media. Well, I mean, as an open society, you have to live with the criticism, and you have to make sure, you know, that your plans, your concepts, and the implementation is functioning, and then, you know, you can prove to the better. I've, right from the beginning, after 2 or 3 months of my stay in South Africa, belonged to that group who always communicated, you know, a positive image of South Africa and a positive image of South Africa's capacity to host 2010. And so far, I think I've been proven right.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Perhaps 2 questions now, and then at 12:30 when it comes. So it looks like the explanation was very, very good. You addressed our concerns, addressed our feelings, addressed our hopes, and perhaps alleviated our fears as well. And therefore, I believe that the presentation was so good. And I don't know whether we have the actual the written submission or if it's just...
I will make it available to you, Chair.
Oh, please. And because it was quite a good presentation. And it's a pity that we do not have even Zagumi around here. Zagumi is the emblem of the World Cup. But I think it's high time that we started with our campaign quite seriously and try and ditch all our resources to try and do our best. I'm not saying that we can match the Germans materially, but I think in some aspects we've got to try even harder, because may not have the same resources, but we are going to try harder and say here comes Bafana, here comes Zagumi, with the hopes of 48 million South Africans behind it. The team, we are quite optimistic. There are a lot of concerns, but I'm sure that the concerns are going to disappear like mist on Sunday and next week when we meet the Japanese and the Jamaicans. So we then once more shall try and build our support. But your support really meant a lot to us, and you really showed the great heart of the Germans, and for that we appreciate your input. And we say thank you to you, and send our greetings to Bakenboa, France, the star of the World Cup. Was it 1976? What was the year? 1966 to 1974. Yeah, he was a real star, and now he's an icon. He's not an icon of the Germans. He modeled a lot of our midfielders. South Africa as well. Our icon is tourism. Look at Khadele, and the our emblem is Zagumi. Is it the leopard? Yeah. Obuhusha. Okay, the leopard. Yes. So we shall try and publicize it as much as possible. It's a pity that the
nothing our parliament can give you as a token of appreciation. But once more, thank you very much.